गिरिवरधारी जय राधा माधव कुंजा बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी
परिव्रजाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद्भिष्टिवाइंगस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रीप्रभुपाद की ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतान की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांगा। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So this morning we are studying Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 3, verse number
19.
Shravidva hosta karai.
Shravidva hosta karai.
Samstuta purusha pashu.
Samstuta purusha pashu.
Nayat karna patho peto.
Nayat karna patho peto.
Jatu nama gadagraja.
Jatu nama gadagraja.
Shravidva hosta karai.
Shravidva
Samstuta purusha pashu.
Samstuta purusha pashu.
Nayat karna patho peto.
Nayat karna patho peto.
Jatu nama gadagraja.
Jatu nama gadagraja.
Please chant. Shravidvara hosta karai. Samstuta purusha pashu. Nayat karna patho peto. Jatu nama gadagraja. Nita. Shravidvara hosta karai. Samstuta purusha pashu. Nayat karna patho peto. Jatu nama gadagraja. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Word to word. Shva, a dog. Vitvaraha, the village hog who eats stool. Ustra, the camel, karai, and by the asses. Samstuta, perfectly praised. Purusha, a person. Pashu, animal. Na, never. Yet, of him. Karna, ear. Patha, path. Upetaha, reached. Jatu, at any time. Nama, the holy name. Gadagraja, Lord Krishna, the deliverer from all evils. Translation. Men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses praise those men who never listen to the transcendental pastimes of Lord Shri Krishna, the deliverer from evils. Purport. The general mass of people, unless they are trained systematically for a higher standard of life and spiritual values, are no better than animals. And in this verse, they have particularly been put on the level of dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. Modern university education practically prepares one to acquire a doggish mentality with which to accept the service of a greater master. After finishing his so-called education, the so-called educated persons move like dogs from door to door with applications for some service, and mostly they are driven away, informed of no vacancy. As dogs are negligible animals and serve the master faithfully for bits of bread, a man serves a master faithfully without sufficient rewards. Still more coming. Persons who have no discrimination in the matter of foodstuff and who eat all sorts of rubbish are compared to hogs. Hogs are very much attached to eating stools. So stool is a kind of foodstuff for a particular type of animal. And even stones are eatables for a particular type of animal or bird. But the human being is not meant for eating everything and anything. He's meant to eat grains, vegetables, fruits, milk, sugar, etc. Animal food is not meant for the human being. For chewing solid food, the human being has a particular type of teeth meant for cutting fruits and vegetables. The human being is endowed with two canine teeth as a concession for persons who will eat animal food at any cost. It is known to everyone that one man's food is another man's poison. Human beings are expected to accept the remnants of food offered to Lord Sri Krishna. And the Lord accepts foodstuff from the categories of leaves, flowers, fruits, etc. Bhagavad Gita 9:26. As prescribed by Vedic scriptures, no animal food is offered to the Lord. Therefore, a human being is meant to eat a particular type of food. He should not imitate the animals to derive so-called vitamin values. Therefore, a person who has no discrimination in regard to eating is compared to a hog. Third animal. The camel is a kind of animal that takes pleasure in eating thorns. A person who wants to enjoy family life or the worldly life of so-called enjoyment is compared to the camel. Materialistic life is full of thorns, and so one should live only by the prescribed method of Vedic regulations just to make the best use of a bad bargain. Life in the material world is maintained by sucking one's own blood. The central point of attraction for material enjoyment is sex life. To enjoy sex life is to suck one's own blood, and there is not much more to be explained in this connection. Prabhupada's comments. The camel also sucks its own blood while chewing thorny twigs. The thorns the camel eats cut the tongue of the camel, and so blood begins to flow within the camel's mouth. The thorns mixed with fresh blood create a taste for the foolish camel, and so he enjoys the thorn-eating business with false pleasure. Similarly, the great business magnates, industrialists, who work very hard to earn money by different ways and questionable means, eat the thorny results of their actions, mixed with their own blood. Therefore, the Bhagavatam has situated these diseased fellows along with the camels. Fourth animal, the ass. The ass is an animal who is celebrated as the greatest fool, even amongst the animals. The ass works very hard and carries burdens of the maximum weight without making profit for itself. The ass is generally engaged by the washerman, whose social position is not very respectable. And the special qualification of the ass is that it is very much accustomed to being kicked by the opposite sex. When the ass begs for sexual intercourse, he is kicked by the fair sex. Yet he still follows the female for such sexual pleasure. A henpecked man is compared, therefore, to the ass. The general mass of people work very hard, especially in the age of Kali. In this age, the human beings is actually engaged in the work of an ass, carrying heavy burdens and driving pela and rickshaws. The so-called advancement of human civilization has engaged a human being in the work of an ass. The laborers in great factories and workshops are also engaged in such burdensome work. And after working hard during the day, the poor laborer has to be again kicked by the fair sex, not only for sex enjoyment, but also for many household affairs. So Prabhupada's conclusion. So, Srimad Bhagavatam's categorization of the common man without any spiritual enlightenment into the society of dogs, hogs, camels, and asses is not at all an exaggeration. The leaders of such ignorant masses of people may feel very proud of being adored by such a number of dogs and hogs, but that is not very flattering. The Bhagavatam openly declares that although a person may be a great leader of such dogs and hogs disguised as men, if he has no taste for being enlightened in the science of Krishna, such a leader is also an animal and nothing more. He may be designated as a powerful, strong animal or a big animal, but in the estimation of Srimad Bhagavatam, he is never given a place in the category of a man on account of his atheistic temperament. Or, in other words, such godless leaders of dogs and hogs are like men, hog-like men are bigger animals with the qualities of animals in greater proportion. Hari Bol. Nama Om Shri Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tiname. Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pacharine. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine. Vansha Kalpataru Bhachar Kripa Sindhu Bhachar Patita Nam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnavi Bhyo Namam Namaha. Thank you, Shri Gaurangi, for giving me such a verse. You must really love me. That's a sweet, loving expression. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam is very direct. Very direct. Although if I just read the translation, I would have no idea what the comparison is. So Prabhupada tells us exactly in detail, very descriptive, about what the comparison is. So when I looked at all the animals, I thought, okay, I understand that, I've seen this, but I never saw camels eating thorns, cactuses, you know, that have a lot of spines, yeah? Cactus have. So I Googled it and got on YouTube and saw. And because it's sometimes important for us to really get into what the Bhagavatam is saying, especially when so much description is given that we are being compared to dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. So maybe we need to know what we are like, you know? What does it mean? So anyway, so I Googled, camel eating cactuses with blood and all that? So I Googled it, and sure enough, there was a camel. You know, they're big, tall animals, you know, with a neck, and not long like a giraffe, but it's pretty good neck there. And he's eating over the fence, the cactuses there, and he's eating those cactuses like crunch, 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 like potato chips. He's just like crunching those things and just enjoying it. And his eyes are like that, you know, almost like a sage, just like enjoying his. And like, when I looked at, and I'm like, wow, this is what we're being compared to. He's enjoying his own blood, and he's really relishing it. And this is the state, what Srila Prabhupada is talking, that as you're working hard, and working hard means we are drawing our own blood, and then we're thinking we're enjoying it. It was actually pretty an eye-opener to see that visual of a cactus, of a camel eating cactus. And then I thought, while I'm here on the internet seeing visual stuff, so why not go to the other animals? Although I've seen them before in India, you know. So I went for the ass. Ass. Is there a difference between ass and a donkey? It's just the same, yeah? It's just a different word. Ass sounds like more kind of rude or something. But anyway, so Prabhupada says ass here. So I was kind of actually very sad. So the other one, I was like shocked, but seeing the ass, there was an ass with like, there were quite many with different things, but this ass had carried like two huge slabs of stone, one on each side, like slab of stones on each side, and those things are, I don't know how much they weighed, probably tons, and this poor little skinny guy has that burden on both sides to balance, I guess, and the master is behind him, telling him to go up the steps. So it wasn't even just like going straight, but going up the steps. And so here, the ass works very hard, and he doesn't get much. He doesn't get much for working so hard. So it was actually a very pitiful thing to see an ass working like that. So I thought, okay, again, comparison, working hard, getting nothing. And then let's look at the hog. You know, you see the hogs in Vrindavan and seeing them going in the gutter and like that. But I went on YouTube. God, it was just so gross. There was a hog who saw freshly baked dinner coming from the oven of the other hog, and he went towards it and just enjoyed his dinner. That was just gross. And I was thinking, wow, Prabhupada is saying here that if we eat foodstuff that is not meant for us, and for us it means prasadam, not just vegetable grains and fruits and like that, but it means prasadam. So if we don't eat prasadam, if we have desire to eat something other than prasadam or eat prasadam, then we're like hogs. I mean, Srimad Bhagavatam is very heavy. It's very, very heavy. Now, here Shanaka is talking, and he's not pointing at one person. He's just like throwing out these words. Oh, you're like those, by the way, don't worship Krishna or whatever. You're like hogs and dogs and camels and asses. So you don't feel so attacked, because it's not you as a person. But Srimad Bhagavatam, and that's the topic, is so heavy. Throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are heavy expressions directly to the person. Here, the comments are just thrown in the air, so you may think, oh, I'm not a hog, and I'm not a dog, and I'm not a camel. It's for the other person next door to me, you know, sitting next to me. It's for Abhigya, not for me, you know. But Srimad Bhagavatam says direct things. So we just finished the first canto. And in the first canto, we hear Narada Muni, the guru, speaking to Vyasadeva. And the first verse, Sutta Goswami says of that chapter, that Narada was very comfortably seated and apparently smiling, he said some words to Vyasadeva. So he wasn't really smiling, apparently smiling, almost like, and you'll see his little sarcasm, a little smirk on his face, you know, apparently smiling. And then he asks him, now this is a one-to-one person talking, so it's not just to anybody, the guru is directly talking to the disciple. Are you satisfied by identifying with the body or the mind? Vyasadeva has written so much literature. He has compiled huge amounts of literature. And then his spiritual master says, are you satisfied by describing about your body and mind? My dear Prabhu. He doesn't say exactly this, but the next verse is, my dear Prabhu. such a pinpointed kind of question and little sarcasm in there, it sounds to me. And then after there's some conversation, he says this right after this, I know, no doubt you have prepared a great and wonderful work, the Mahabharata. So, he praises him. You've done a good job. You've written nice stories, Mahabharata and all that. But then he says, but guess what? Sorry to tell you, but the literature that you have written is actually a place of pilgrimage for crows. What a heavy thing to say. After a person has written all that, he's saying to his disciple that's just a pilgrimage. What you have written is just a place of pilgrimage for crows. But he doesn't stop there. He doesn't stop there that this is what you have written. But then he further says to him that you did a disservice. So sure enough, people will go, crows will go for it. But actually you did a very big disservice to write that, because by writing such a thing, you're encouraging, people will read that, and in the name of religion, they will do activities, and basically fruitive activities, karmakanda activities, and they will say that they are being religious. So in the name of religion, they're going to be doing fruitive activities. So you really did a disservice. That's heavy. And it's broadcasted for all of us. So we did something wrong, and then it's written in the Bhagavatam. We all get to hear the conversation with the guru getting on the case of his disciple. We as a family read the Lilamrita, and in the Lilamrita we were reading that how one time Prabhupada was sitting Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was giving class, and all his disciples were sitting in that room. And at that time, Prabhupada was sitting there, Abhaya at that time, and then this other older gentleman was sitting next to Srila Prabhupada, and he wanted to say something to Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada leaned over to hear. And when Bhakti Siddhanta saw that, as Sasumaj writes, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta suddenly spoke out in annoyance at the two apparently inattentive students. Babu, he first addressed the old man besides Abhay, do you think you have purchased me with your 150 rupees per month donation? And then, turning to Abhay, why don't you come up here and speak instead of me? Such a heavy statement. I remember Nagaraj Prabhu was talking about a Gundicha temple, and he was saying that how everybody was collecting piles of dirt, and then those who had collected very small pile of dirt, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said something to the something saying basically, oh, everybody should follow in their footsteps, because look at the pile they have collected, being sarcastic. But yes, so just this one came, I had so many things that came to my mind as far as Bhagavatam being heavy. But just since we just covered the first canto and all these things are fresh in all our memories, we know Vidura. Now Vidura went on pilgrimage after the war, and during the war, because he didn't want to take part during that time. Actually, he had gone before, but so he comes back after the war is over and everything. He comes back to Hastinapur. He had heard from Mahatma Maitreya Muni, and after hearing from him and everything, he comes back to Hastinapur. And he could, you know, he's a great devotee, great sage, and he could see what was happening in the palace, and especially he was concerned about his brother Dhritarashtra. So when he addresses Dhritarashtra, he says to him, and these are very like sore points to Dhritarashtra. His whole thing was that he was blind. So Vidura, he addresses Dhritarashtra, you have been blind from your very birth. Can you imagine? You're blind, and that's your sore point, that you never, you didn't get to rule, you because he was blind. Everything, his whole life, he was feeling like my misfortune is my blindness, and because of my being blind, I couldn't be who I wanted to be. My son couldn't be the king, and now they're all killed. So he's telling, he comes and tells him, you have been blind since birth. How would you feel? Somebody tells you that when you know it hurts. And so he's telling him directly, you've been blind from your very birth. And he's not just saying blind with eyesight. Vidura doesn't say one thing and that's it. He says a lot of things in that one word. He's talking about blind. You've been blind to what is the best for you. You've been blind to so many things, being so atrocious to the Pandavas. You've been blind to everything, to the feelings of your brother's family and everything. So you've been blind from your very birth. And recently, you have become hard of hearing. Yeah. And then, he says, your memory is shortened. So you don't even remember anything. And your intelligence is disturbed. So he's telling right there to the person, you're blind, you can't hear, your intelligence is disturbed, your memory is gone, your teeth are loose, your liver is defective, and you're coughing up mucus. Very descriptive. He tells it as it is. And then he says, alas, how powerful are the hopes of living being to continue his life. And then he compares him to a dog. Verily, you're living just like a household dog and are eating remnants of food given by Bhima, whom you hated so much, who has killed all your sons. And you're eating his remnants like a household dog. So, Bhagavatam, that's the topic. Bhagavatam is very heavy. And I'm sure each one of you has their own favorite topic that kind of like pinches you. Or I know when I heard in the ninth canto about Shukadev Goswami, or who is the speaker there at that time? Maybe Shukadev, but anyway. When they're talking about Lord Ramachandra and his pastimes, and in the one of the verse, and I will just read it to you. When Ramachandra entered the forest and Lakshmana also was absent, the worst of the Rakshasa, Ravana, kidnapped Sita Devi, the daughter of the king of Videha. Just as tiger seizes unprotected sheep when the shepherd is absent. Then Lord Ramachandra wandered in the forest with his brother Lakshmana, as if very much distressed due to separation from his wife. Thus he showed by his personal example the condition of a person attached to women. that was just like, to me, it was like, wow. How could the Bhagavatam say that? That's what is showing a condition of person attached to women. I mean, that whole pastime, and Lord, you're just feeling, you know, wow, Sita Devi is taken away, and you feel like, wow, good Lord, Ramachandra is going and going after Sita Devi and doing everything, and apparently, I haven't read that, but apparently in Ramayana, the longest chapters, the number amount of chapters describes about Lord Ram's distress is the longest. But you feel like, wow, this is the right thing, you know. It is, but to come out to say that is the example of a condition of a person attached to women. That was heavy for me to hear that. That was intense. So Bhagavatam is full of these kind of comparison, like heavy stuff, and comparing to animals. Who wants somebody to say to you, you're just like an animal, or you're just like an ass, or you, I mean, you're just a hog, but or like a monkey jumping from one branch to another. He remains in the tree of household life without any profit but sex. I mean, Bhagavatam is heavy. My question to you is, and I would like to hear your reflections, why is the Bhagavatam so heavy? I mean, Bhagavatam, studying the Bhagavatam is our sadhana. Every day we study Bhagavatam. Every day we are encouraged to study the Bhagavatam. And luckily, our process is not just studying Bhagavatam. We get together, we sing, we dance, you know, kirtan, and then we sit down and we're told you're hogs, camels, dogs, asses, whatever. And then later on we prasadam, and then in the evening we read Krishna book. And so then there's the sweetness there. But there is this Bhagavatam that is heavy. So why is the Bhagavatam so heavy? And I'd like to hear from you, your reflection. Yes, Bhagavati Prabhu. And I'll try to repeat.
Just this morning, maybe an email, I don't know, Facebook or maybe last night, but was a visual. There was a picture of Prabhupada boarding a plane, and then it said that someone asked him, why are you traveling?
Okay, 1 second. Just a second, because I'll forget. So, Mother Bhagavati is saying that she just saw a visual this morning of a Prabhupada boarding a plane. And then somebody asked Srila Prabhupada, why are you traveling?
Traveling so much.
So much. Why are you traveling so much? Okay.
And Prabhupada said, to save you from traveling through 8,400,000
species. Wow. So Prabhupada said, I'm traveling all over just to save you, so that you don't have to travel through 8,400,000 species of life. Thank you. That just summarizes why. Any other reflection on that? Yes, Abhigya Prabhu.
I think, Vyasa has compiled Veda before, so given knowledge, so those people who were intelligent, they went away, and then he compiled.
Okay, 1 second. So Abhigya Prabhu is saying that how Vedavyas compiled all the different Vedas, and people
intelligent enough.
People intelligent enough, and they passed on to their higher planets.
And then he created Mahabharata, and then, you know, people who could understand the duties and Nishkam Karma, they left. And
left where?
They left for the Golok Vrindavan. Out of the cycle of birth and death.
Okay, okay.
And then those people who are now dogs and hogs like me, they are here chastised by Bhagavatam, and you know, now understand, okay, now it's time, you know, nothing else.
So,
before
so
we get beaten into the Patal Lok.
Okay, so Abhigya Prabhu is saying that for us poor souls who are like hogs and dogs, we are giving the Bhagavatam, chastising us because we didn't make it before. So now we are giving the Bhagavatam in this age of Kali to help us go beyond this cycle of birth and death. Raghavendra Prabhu?
I was thinking that, the point made about whatever one's consciousness is at the time of death, that will determine his destination and maybe what species. So each of these animals described here, it's depicting a particular attitude or mindset or, that a human being may have. And that's where he'll take a body, described just like that.
Yeah. Thank you. So it's trying for us to be introspective, to tell us that, okay, look within and see where your attitude is towards and then change it. Yes, Ampur.
Just look at the audience, Look at the audience who the Bhagavatam has spoken to, Shukadev. Shukadev Goswami speaking to Maharaj Parikshit. He only has 1 week. He's left his wife, left his whole family. So he's telling the story of Ramayana, but he's giving it, here's the message. Don't be attached.
Thank you. So is this message just for him or is it not for us?
Well, it's for him, but it's for all of us too. But we're kind of putting ourselves in his position, like, all right, what if I have to leave in 1 week, then?
Or this moment.
Yeah.
Yes. Any other thoughts? Sridhari Muni Prabhu, and then Shigrangi, and then Sridhari.
I was thinking, in this day and age, we're so deeply conditioned and easily distracted, that to really get these points through, he has to make a significant slap, not just gently or referring to it hintingly, we're not going to get it.
We're not going to get it. Yeah, it's like somebody, it feels like when you hear it, it feels like somebody is taking you by your neck and just like, don't you hear this? Get your life together. It's like, that's how it feels like when you hear these comments, Sridhari Muni Prabhu, why don't you get this? Haven't you been hearing
for so many
years?
Don't worry about it, it's beyond hope. But, so the question is, why is the Bhagavatam so heavy?
Yeah.
Well, if you buy a set of BBT books from Divya, it only weighs about 15, 20 pounds. And if you read it online, it doesn't weigh anything at all.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for all your comments. And Vigvati Prabhu said that Prabhupada's compassion, it was his compassion that was saying that he didn't want all of us to have to travel 8,400,000 species of life. And we understand that the Bhagavatam is spoken by Krishna. Yeah? This is a literal incarnation. Literary incarnation of Lord Shri Krishna. So it's Lord Shri Krishna is speaking this to us. And that shows his compassionate nature. Krishna, every single word of Bhagavatam, everything is about Krishna. It's showing us qualities about Krishna. It's talking about his relationship with with the living entities. That's what Bhagavatam is all about, rasa, and on different platforms. And so here we see Lord Krishna's compassionate mood, his quality of compassion. I went to see a nectar devotion to see Krishna's compassionate nature, and it describes it defines compassionate a person who is unable to bear another's distress is called compassionate. And it gives two examples, in the Nectar Devotion, gives two examples of Krishna's compassion. But I will read you the part where it describes about Grandfather Bhishma. If we understand that Krishna is compassionate to us, so then when we hear these heavy instructions that he gives us, then, because sometimes people can say mean things because of envy, but we know this is not coming from that. We know that. It's out of pure love. It's coming from pure love from Krishna, from his heart, from the acharyas. Here Shanaka is speaking. We know Shanaka came, and all the great sages came there to do sacrifice for 10,000 years. For who? For us, so that we don't have to go through 8,400,000 species of life. That's what they were seeing, that we're Kali Yuga people. So when Shanaka is coming and saying that, it's not envy. It's actually compassion, caring for us. And it's important for us to hear. So even when we hear from other people, sometimes our God brothers, God sisters may say something to us that might pinch us. But if we know the person, they know, especially family members can do that. They may say things to us that might pinch, but then we know it's coming from a place of love and not an envy or putting us down. So here, Krishna, when as we read the Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that Krishna is being compassionate to us, and he really doesn't want us to suffer. Then when we hear such words that we can really meditate on. So the example here that is given by Rupa Goswami, he describes that while Krishna's compassion was also exhibited when Grandfather Bhishma was lying on the bed of arrows, which had been shot through his body. While lying in this position, Bhishma was very anxious to see Krishna, and thus Krishna appeared there. He appeared there because Bhishma wanted to see him. Do know that Krishna will come and see us if we really, really have that strong desire. So he came to see him. Then, upon seeing the pitiable condition of Bhishma, Krishna began speaking with tears in his eyes. Can you imagine Krishna having tears in his eyes? Not only was he shedding tears, but he also forgot himself in his compassion. So he was so overwhelmed with compassion for his dear devotee that he was shedding tears, and he forgot himself. So this is how Krishna is compassionate. And then Prabhupada says further, therefore, instead of offering obeisances to Krishna directly, devotees offer obeisances to his compassionate nature. And I want to end with a sweet note here. Actually, because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is very difficult to approach him. But the devotees, taking advantage of his compassionate nature, which is represented by Srimati Radharani, always pray to Radharani for Krishna's compassion. So we can pray to Srimati Radharani for her compassion. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Hare Krishna.